This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome to This Week in Sports, or This Bye Week in Sports. We've been on about a bi-weekly rotation here. Here on the Place to Be Nation Sports Network 2.0. I'm your host, the Cowboy. Joined, as always, by my partner in crime, one of my best buds, and a real sports nut that I can respect, Mr. John D'Amato. How you doing, John?
Pretty good, pretty good. You got the nut part. You got the nut part covered.
Hey, always.
And it's definitely nutty around here.
We're all nuts on this show. That's what I always say.
The hoops world was very nutty last night.
Man. So we're recording here on Wednesday, right in the middle, right at halftime of Bucks-Raptors. Raptors are up right now. We'll see what happens there. But we're going to talk some basketball. I think we're going to talk to the whole show. We're going to talk some basketball because it's a very exciting time in the world of NBA basketball now. As I mentioned, we're recording on Wednesday. And for you astute basketball fans that we have as listeners, you'll know that Tuesday night was one of the most anticipated nights in the NBA every season, and that's the draft lottery. Particularly so when you have a once-in-a-generation talent, or so it seems, in Zion Williamson as the prize for the team that wins. A lot of John, the Pelicans, obviously. Pelicans get the one, Grizzlies 2, Knicks 3. So a lot of social media, a lot of hype beforehand around the Knicks winning the lottery. That I felt like the expectations were kind of too high when, as you know, and I'm sure as our listeners know, they redid the lottery this year, so the bottom four teams all had the same chance. It's 14%. 14% is not a great chance at anything. It's not even 2 out of 10. So it's tough. I feel for you, Knicks fans, but I feel like there were some unrealistic expectations placed on how these ping pong balls were going to come out, and at least you're not the five, right? I mean, the three's an okay pick, and I know you would love to get Zion, but what do you think about that? What do you think? Unrealistic expectations? I thought so.
I must have said 14% about a million times this week, but unfortunately, as you say, a lot of Knicks fans and basketball fans were clueless of the new lottery system. So 14% is what, about a 7-1 odds?
Right.
Yeah. As a reformed gambler, I bet many a fin on 7-1 odds about 100 times, and you know how many times I won? A lot closer to zero. So I knew what it was coming in. Most fans were clueless. They thought it was pretty much a slam dunk or like a 50-50 shot or something. So, but that's number one. But and number two, I had corresponded before, and with plenty of my Knicks fans, I said anything less than three would have been a disaster. The real disasters were Cleveland and Phoenix. Now those were disasters. To not to get a top three for those two, that would have been. That would have been total, a suicide, on top of the building for Knicks fans.
For what it's worth, I don't know that Cleveland or Phoenix deserve to be in the top three. I mean, how many times are you going to be in the top three and still be at that 14%? You know, I mean, Phoenix got the one last year, right? I know the Cavs had the seven, but the Cavs got the one three times in the last decade. C'est la vie, that's what I say.
Yeah, but this is a once in a decade or whatever talent. So there was a lot of hype around it. But as a Knicks fan, I'm not too upset. I'm not bitter. And it's also good that the Pelicans and the Grizzlies got the first two picks, because first of all, it keeps Zion and Ja out of the East. So for the Knicks, there's at the beginning of next year, assuming Kawhi leaves Toronto, your power rankings are pretty much going to be Boston, Philly, and Milwaukee are going to be the top three. And who's number four? If you ask like 10 different people, you could probably get like 10 different answers. So that number four is wide open.
I mean, a lot of it obviously depends on what happens in the offseason.
On June 30th, sure. But just say like even like if a Chicago would have got Zion, they could have shot up real quick. Like any team that got Zion would have took the express train to that upper echelon in the East. Chicago. Yeah.
And even I think it's a really interesting landing spot for him in New Orleans, because you have to think this is the one thing, right, that maybe I don't think they can trade Anthony Davis now, unless I mean, I guess you guys are probably interested sitting at the three, but you got to give more than the third pick for him. And
nah, they wouldn't be able to make up that money. You got to match his salary. I don't see how they could do it, because the Knicks got rid of all their big salary guys.
You would think that Davis, as a basketball player, even with the way how awful last season was, and I mean it was his own fault, absolutely. The Pelicans didn't do anything, right? I mean, you have a guy who's under contract who essentially tries to hold the team hostage to move himself to Los Angeles. We've seen that work before, but when it doesn't work, it's pretty ugly, and it was pretty ugly. But you have a team that starts with Jrue Holiday, who's fantastic. He had a great year. We're very under the radar, but he's a really, really good player. Anthony Davis, who's, you know, at worst a top 10 guy in the league, when he's right, probably a top 5 guy. And Zion, I mean, that's a core.
Julius Randle too.
Yeah, I mean, that's a core that can contend right away. It's tougher in the West, but I mean, I think that at the very least is a playoff team. And I mean, it wouldn't shock me as a 5 or 6 seed, you know, that they're a team that could make some noise with a bright future. So if you're the Pelicans, are you still? I guess if Boston comes with the Godfather offer, you kind of have to take it, even though every guy in that offer, you know, reduced their value by 25% over the last 2 weeks. They can offer a lot. You would probably have to take it. I hope the Celtics.
Or Lakers.
They already turned down the Lakers, right? I mean, I guess if they throw the fourth pick in, but I think there's something personal there where they're not going to trade him to the Lakers, period. I truly believe that. I mean, they turned down? Didn't they turn down Ingram, Kuzma, Lonzo, Kuzma, and two or three first-round picks? If that's not getting it done, that's New Orleans' brass saying, screw you. We're not trading them to you.
But that was with a different GM that they canned.
So, Dell?
And that was a big, that was a big reason. But then again, now if AD stays, he should get his job back.
Oh, yeah.
That's unfair. He got fired unfairly if AD stays, man. Now all of a sudden this guy looks like a genius. He didn't do a dick, or he just sat there while and celebrated while they lucked into the one pick. I mean, come on, Griffin, man. Jeez.
That was one of your 7-1 shots right there. I mean, they had a 6% chance? They had a 6% chance of winning it. But rumors are that Zion wasn't real thrilled about it. But everything you hear about the kid, I've heard stuff about, you know, just speculation that he might pull the Eli Manning and yada yada. But everything you see with that kid and hear about that kid is that, you know, he kind of reminds me from a, you know, an attitude standpoint of Giannis in that. I mean, really good teammate, really seems to just care about basketball.
I'm not buying any of that. That's just bitter, you know, fans that didn't get him. And also, did you see that ridiculous Brian Windhorst? It's only good to watch it. You know, he's speculating that, you know, hey, Zion hasn't signed an agent and he hasn't signed a shoe deal. Maybe he'll stay in school. It's just good to watch that footage just to see Richard Jefferson's reaction.
He's not staying in school.
Exactly. That's what Richard Jefferson was next to Windhorst, clowning him the whole time while he was saying it. Because, you know, Windhorst only doing it to sell his books or get attention like he does. And, it's just good comedy that comes out of it.
Yeah, and I mean, because even without Davis, if they traded Davis to the Celtics, you would assume it would be like Tatum, Brown, and other stuff, right? And good other stuff. Definitely that. Definitely the Memphis pick, right? Definitely the Memphis pick. Yeah. Definitely probably two or three of the first rounders they have this year, maybe all four of them. And, you know, even if they do that, the Pelicans, that's, again, that's a roster that can contend too. Looking at who got the two, Memphis is almost certainly going to take Ja Morant. That really frees up like a guy, like I thought Conley was going to get traded anyway, but now, like, I mean, I'm sure of it. And that's another good all-star level player that's going to be available to go to one of these other teams, like the Lakers, like the Knicks. What do you think of that? You agree with that he's gone?
No, I think that they could might keep him as a mentor.
Makes a lot of money. I mean, his contract is like really, really
good. Yeah, but I don't think they plan on contending for a couple of years. They're nowhere to contend. They obviously need more pieces.
Right. So I guess it depends on what you get for him, right?
Either that or they have so much, you know, respect for him, and he's done a lot for the franchise. Just about the only one that they'll probably leave it up to him if he says right. He wants to go, or if they'll give him a chance to mentor Ja. And they already came out. I like that there's no BS in this draft. They already came right out today and said that Ja's their dude. I like that.
I like it too.
There's no and especially for a Knicks fan, there's no there's no way. I don't think
want to hear the speculation that he's going to fall to year at three.
It's RJ all the way. Yeah, it's RJ all the way. That's okay by me. RJB all the way. That's fine.
He's a really good player. I think he was in a little bit of a tough situation at Duke in that, I mean, he came in as the guy, right? He was the number one. Like, if they would have had, if they would have still had the high school kids in the draft, he would have gone number one.
Yeah, he got surpassed by Zion.
He got surpassed by Zion, and Zion was such a phenomenon.
Yeah.
These are just kids. I mean, he's an 18-year-old kid. It's got to get in your head a little bit. And the other thing about that Duke team, and it ended up being in their undoing, is that nobody could shoot. So for a slasher like that, you know, the lanes always, you know, the lanes always fill. He's kind of miscast. He's not a great shooter. He's kind of miscast, shooting a lot of spot-up jump shots. I think the sky's the limit with that kid. I feel like it's a three-person draft in a lot of ways. So if I were a Knicks fan, I wouldn't be, you know, of course you want Zion, but I would be pretty happy. RJ Barrett's a heck of a consolation prize.
Yeah, he could definitely score, but he needs to improve his decision making and his percentage and he doesn't get the highlights that Zion does. He's pretty methodical scorer, but definitely nothing to be embarrassed about for the Knicks. It's a good thing we're getting another quality player, and because after that it's gonna be a crapshoot.
But yeah, the Lakers horseshoed their way into the four.
Yeah, but even that, you've seen.
You got to think they're trading with that pick.
Yeah, with the Lakers past, who knows how they're gonna do with that? Because you saw how D'Angelo Russell and Randall they thrived elsewhere. So
I think they're gonna trade the pick. I mean, LeBron's old at this point, right? I mean, he's how many? What does he have? 2 or 3 years left at this level, max, most likely. You've got to surround him with veterans, right? I mean, some 19, the kid from Vanderbilt is probably who they would take, or Cam Reddish. Those guys aren't going to be ready for playoff basketball right away. I think they trade it for a more of an established guy. Maybe sign and trade for Kyrie Irving. You like my segue there, John?
Yeah, I love it.
So, the Boston Celtics. So we've talked. We were on about 2 weeks ago, I believe. I'm not sure if the Celts had already gone up 1-0 the last time that we talked. But at worst, they had just had been impressive against an Indiana team that we probably should have realized was a little shorthanded without Victor Oladipo and didn't have a great roster, but. It looked like the Celts may have finally, put it together. All season, they've been just a giant frustration. Tons of talent, not a lot of fun to watch, constantly peak and valleys. And they went out and stomped the Bucks in game one, leading to poor Paul Pierce infamously saying the series was over, and then proceeded to just get crushed, just killed. The last two games, four in a row they lost. The last two games, particularly the last game, a full-on embarrassment for Kyrie Irving. He was a mess the whole series for a guy who, and I'm not repeating, I'm not saying things that you guys probably all haven't heard, but for a guy who talked all year about leadership and I'm a playoff guy and wait till the playoffs. I mean, he was freaking terrible, awful in the playoffs. And I truly feel like he was I don't like to overreact to this stuff, but I feel like he was like genuinely a cancer on this team, and I hold him almost solely responsible for how things ended up. And I read today that the Ainge wants to go after Davis, and he thinks that that'll bring Kyrie back. And I'm against it as a Celtics fan. I don't really want the guy back. I guess if you're going to bring him back, having him not be the best player on the team, he seems to do a lot better in that role, would be good. But with those two, I mean, they're both kind of malcontent as your two-place guys, and neither one of them locked up long-term. You're going to give away every asset you have, and there's a very real possibility that after 1 year or 2 years, they're both gone and you're left with shit. So, fun times here in Boston, John. What do you think?
I'm not really going to defend Kyrie, but I have to dispute what some of you and your fellow Celtic fans are kind of throwing one guy under the bus. I think it was a group effort, and I have to throw a little shade on the boy Wonder, your coach, who's been Mr. Perfect ever since he took over. Number one, he inserted Gordon Hayward coming off that gruesome injury. He inserts him right into the starting lineup.
Yep, a mistake.
At the beginning
Absolutely.
Of the year. Which really pissed off your young Bucks, Jalen and Tatum and Brown, and they stagnated this year. They did not improve. Not that they got it much worse, but they didn't really improve this year. They kind of stagnated. So I got to blame your coach for that. And overall, the morale of your team, the morale of Celtics was horrible this year. And anybody that's been any kind of manager or supervisor, when the morale is low, that's on the boss, man. So he's got to take a hit for that. Whatever, everybody's just, Kyrie. But there's a lot of, bitching and moaning and the boss, the coach got to take care of that. And he didn't. And also you got Terry Rozier, going on all these talk shows, running his mouth, what was Terry Rozier last year in Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals? What was he, about 1-for-37? If I had a game like that, I would shut the fuck up. John Starks in 1994, he never said a word after that 2-for-18 performance. So, Terry Rozier should just zip it and do your performance on the court. I actually like him, but I didn't like how he was a little he was kind of mouthy too. Insinuating that it was all Kyrie. A lot of these other guys got to look in the mirror too.
They had too many guys. Like they really should have done something at the trade deadline to dump a couple of those guys.
Yeah.
And there's too many mouths to feed. I'm willing to give Stevens a little bit of a pass just based on his history.
Yeah.
And it's an untenable situation he had, I think.
With that, if you ask me, I wouldn't want Kyrie on the Knicks, but even though it looks like it's going that way, because the thing also that hurts Kyrie, he's not a good press conference media guy. He pretty much just says
that's the understatement
what's on his mind.
Of the year.
Yeah, and he doesn't have like a poker face, so if he's pissed off, he's going to say it. A lot of guys, like LeBron and these guys are masters at always saying the right thing, and he's just got that knack for always saying the wrong thing. If you ask him what shape the earth is, he's not really going to come up with a good answer with that too. So he's not a media savvy. That really hurts him too.
Yeah. I mean, if Durant, and I mean, I know you, if I were a Knicks fan, I would be, I would try not to get my hopes up too much.
Talk to me. We're going to have to do a show on July 1st.
It does look like a very real possibility that Durant goes to New York.
Yeah. I'm not touching the money until June 30th.
If he does, I think Kyrie makes a lot of sense.
As a number two, sure.
As a second banana to the Blake. And there's no question he's the second banana because, I mean, Durant's probably the best player in the league. And, I mean, that's a good situation for him. And Durant also doesn't give a shit about the media. I mean, he's also a little bit of a – he can be a little standoffish and, you know, maybe it won't play that well in New York, but at least Kyrie will have some cover. For the Celts, like I said, I get the point on Stevens. And, you know, ultimately, right, it is on him. But given his past success – and just given this situation, and some of it was his own doing, as you pointed out, the Hayward stuff, could not agree more. The situation was untenable that he was in. I don't know what he could have done to make that locker room better. I mean, he gave everybody playing time. Maybe if you do, you know what I mean? Like, what's the answer when you got 10 guys who all expect to play? And, you know, a few of those guys were in the friggin' Eastern Conference Finals, like Rozier, getting huge minutes, and now back to the Pine. It's tough. It's a tough situation.
Well, Hayward's his boy from college, so there's always, you know, whispers that, oh, you know, he's favoring his boy a
lot.
Hayward
was friggin' terrible against the Bucks. He had started to play better, and he was awful in that series.
Yeah, so there's always going to be whispers that, oh, you know, he's favoring his boy. You know, if somebody, you know, if Hayward gets more run, you know, than somebody else, so he's always got that to deal with.
I say they let Kyrie walk. That's my that's my hot take, and I don't think he's coming back. I mean, if you were him, would you come back? I mean, he seemed completely miserable. You know, I don't think he's coming back. So we'll see what happens. Thing that got lost in the shuffle was the how well the Bucks played in that series. They were, I mean, after game one, where it looked like they just didn't show up for whatever reason. They played great. I mean, that Giannis is ridiculous, right? Giannis is, he may not be the best all around player in the NBA, but he's close, and he's definitely got that. You know, he's the biggest force in the NBA. He's essentially unstoppable when he puts his head down, and he was even making threes. And like I said, I love the guy's attitude, everything about him. I love everything about Giannis, and he was phenomenal. And I like what they've done. They've surrounded him with guys who can shoot, right? So guys like Connaughton and Chris Middleton, and they're a good team. Brook Lopez, who any contender could have had for very short money, has been fantastic for them. And with or without Durant, and I have no idea what's going on in the game right now, but regardless of what happens in game one against the Raptors, the Bucks are my pick to win it all this year. I think they're going to win it all this year. I was super, super impressed with them.
Wow, very good. Well, let's slow the roll on that. For now, I got the Bucks in five, but they're very deep. And you know who's the key in the Celtics? It was George Hill.
Oh, yeah.
The bench. George Hill off the bench.
He's another guy who, like, not everybody can play with LeBron. You know what I mean? And he looked like last year. I mean, Hill looked like he had a big fork sticking out of his back. He looked done. And he's rejuvenated. He played great. He was, I mean, real steady, and he brings that playoff toughness. Great call there, John. He was fantastic.
Yeah, they're one of the deepest teams that's left out of these four. They got about 10 guys that aren't going to embarrass you, while everybody else is right about 7 or 8 as the cutoff. So right.
Bledsoe's the one guy who's like, he can be real trick or treat for them, and I think Budenholzer, like, if Bledsoe like clearly doesn't have it, there's got to be a little bit of a quick hook there.
Yeah,
because he's a guy who will lose you a playoff game if he's off.
They got plenty of guys to go to. Brogdon just came back from injury, so but I got them a five. And if you want to talk about the great game sevens,
before we do that, John, let's take a quick break. I'm gonna I'd like to tell everybody what we have going on here at Place to Be Nation. So on the Pop feed, we had a busy week with a little something for everyone. Ben Morse and Russell Sellers close out 1970 on a new Marvel Age masterclass. Jenny Smith welcomes in Todd Weber to watch Yoga Hosers in this month's Freak Out Drive-In. I can honestly say I've never heard of that movie, so I'm going to talk to Jenny about that, because, or I am going to I'm gonna check out Freak Out Drive In and see about that, because sounds interesting. Yoga hosers. JT Rizzero, Peter Winston, and Don Carrara paid tribute to the wonderful Veep as it winds down its run. And actually, I believe the finale was Sunday. So they even got a shout out from Julia Louis-Dreyfus for the Pop Special podcast. Did you see that, John? The Julia Louise giving him a little love.
Yes, beautiful.
Andy Atherton, my favorite double A, and Russell Sellers gave a look at Forgetting Sarah Marshall on this episode of Laugh-In Theater. I love that movie. Hard traveling fanboys head off the page with a review of Marvel Ultimate Alliance. And speaking of Nick and Greg, coming up at the end of May, the Hard Traveling Fanboys will be wrapping up their Hard Travelers for Hire series with a special giant-sized edition of the podcast. Greg and Nick will be joined by past guests for a retrospective look back at the highs and lows of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and they want your opinions. After you've seen Endgame, send in your full ranking of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies from 1 to 22 to Nick D at placetobenation.com. The full composite rankings for Place to Be Nation will be revealed on the show, so get your ballots in to make your voice heard. Ballots are due, it'll be the day that this podcast is airing, May 16th. So on the wrestling feed, Scott, JT, and you, Mr. D'Amato, gave a supersized deep dive into WrestleMania 5 on episode 519 of the Place to Be podcast. Did you have a good time doing that, my friend?
Oh, yes, amazing. Reliving 1989, nothing like the 80s.
Excellent, excellent. I was a little guy in the 80s, but I love the music. In the third episode of Row One, Seat One, Ben Zaney chats with up-and-comer O'Shea Edwards and then breaks down the Making Towns Classic in the WrestleMania weekend Black Craft Wrestling Show. In a new Making Towns with Friends, Steve welcomes in Kelly Jean to talk about her first live wrestling experience. We continue to dive into the vault to bring you classic episodes of Where the Big Boys Play. In this installment, Parv, Chad, and Solomon finish their look at Starrcade 1987. Check out our social media pages and message board at www.bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our Greatest Wrestler Ever pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in on the conversation today and start researching your list. So a lot of good stuff here at Place to Be Nation. Happy to share that. I would strongly encourage everyone, if you're a fan of our show, to check out some of these other great shows if you're not doing so already. A little something for everyone at Place to Be Nation. Am I right, Mr. D'Amato?
Yeah, I got to give an extra plug. That was awesome. The Laugh-In Theater with Forgetting Sarah Marshall with Russell and Andy.
Excellent.
One of my favorite movies too.
And, it's a great movie.
Yes.
It's a great movie. If you don't lie, mind a little, you know, little schwanz, as they say. A little schwanz in the movie.
Actually, quite a big one.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't going to go there, but I can always count on you, John. That's why we're such a good team.
And also about that movie, that was about the first, last, and only time that Russell Brand was mildly amusing.
Oh, he was great in that movie. Deep inside of you.
Yep.
Love that movie. You didn't like Get Him to the Greek?
Pass. Pass on everything else he did ever.
Even as the same character, huh? All right. I thought Get Him to the Greek. It was not as good, but I thought it was all right. A little P. Diddy. P. Diddy was in it. Everybody loves P. Diddy.
Yeah.
All right, John, you mentioned it. We had some Game 7 action. So let's start with Philly-Toronto. The shot heard around the world, but not by everybody. So I have a confession to make. The missus and I are pretty big Game of Thrones fans, and impossible to not get spoiled if you don't watch it live. And I don't know if you knew this, but they basically Game of Thrones started with about 10 minutes left in the Philly-Toronto game. And unfortunately, or fortunately, it was a good episode, but I was watching Game of Thrones, and I had like the game cast up on my phone. So I didn't actually – I saw Toronto won at the buzzer, but I did not actually see the shot live. I had to catch it on replay later, but absolutely incredible. What a moment. Best moment of the playoffs so far. Best moment in the history of the Raptors franchise. Crying Embiid is a meme. What a moment. What do you think, John?
I'm still just getting over your Game of Thrones. There's no way you could turn off your phone or anything. What are you gonna do Sunday without being spoiled?
I know. I'm gonna not. I am going to not look at my phone, and then I am going to watch it. I'm going to actually watch it when I get home from Hartford.
Okay.
That's
not too hard. You could put the phone away for a little.
Yeah, yeah. To let everybody in on what we're talking about here, John and I will be attending Money in the Bank in person. Looking forward to meeting some Place to Be Nation guys that we haven't met before. Calvin, right? Is it just Calvin or is someone else too?
Yeah, Calvin,
very active member of the chat. I know he's a listener of this show, so very much looking forward to meeting him. And we'll have my 9-year-old nephew Ryder with us, along with my 39-year-old best bud, who has been who made some appearances on the Sports Lounge before, Rocky Boyle. He's always a piece of work to have around. So it's gonna be a good trip.
Yeah, I can't wait to smell what the Rock is cooking.
You never know what the Rock might be cooking some, beefsteak in my new car on the way home, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but so, I'll fill you in. I'll fill you in on what you missed on that Game 7. Yeah, very thrilling, and Kawhi and Serge Ibaka were pretty much 2-on-5 in that fourth quarter. A Herculean effort by those two because. Toronto didn't really get much help. Kyle Lowry, as usual in the playoffs, is what he is. But very disappointing was Siakam in the Philly series. He played like an all-star level all year. But the Philly series, he didn't reach those heights, and he left Kawhi on the island, and Kawhi, uncharacteristic, had to. Chuck up about what was it, 39 shots?
It was 39 shots.
Yeah, he did like a 13-for-39. Which is an average day for a cowboy on Flanagan Square Garden.
Hey, somebody's got to be the volume scorer, right?
That was pretty
Allen
much
Allen Iverson, because, cowboy on Flanagan Court. That's it.
That's what it reminded me of because he had to take all those shots because he was about the only one that could score. I mean, when it came to the fourth quarter of that game was rough. And Embiid gave a solid effort, but the series when Philly went up 2-1 and Embiid, up by 40 in game three, Embiid does the windmill dunk and he's doing the airplane and all that, they were up 2-1. Toronto looked dead as can be. And then, out in game four, Embiid comes out and he's sick and all that. That was the time to really hammer him down and
put on
Toronto's throat.
Yep.
Yeah, and go up 3-1 and just dust them. And you give Toronto the game five and then you dust them at home. That was the time to show that killer instinct. And it didn't happen. It seems like Embiid, he's just so close to being that, to being that elite player. But it's always, gets hurt or sick or something. It's just that he's got to take that next level. I mean, I don't mean to disparage him. He's great and all that, but look at the resume. They got a beastly as good a starter five as anybody in the league, and but you got to look at the results in the last 2 years. They've beaten the Nets and the Heat, two teams that could barely be considered playoff teams. They won two playoff rounds in 2 years. So, next year, whatever they do, if they keep the same cast of characters or they get different, they have to they got to step up.
Yeah. And I mean, he's a great player, but the thing that rubbed me the wrong way was when he was bagging on the Warriors. Like, I mean, really?
But, oh yeah,
are you kidding me? Like, I mean, maybe get out of the second round before you bag on a team. That's what, three or four, however many championships they have. And I mean, yeah, they blew a 3-1 lead in the finals.
Hey,
like, to the best player of all time, one of the best players of all time. Get yourself to the finals.
he bags on everybody. He's always making fun of the Knicks when they traded Porzingis and all that. Yeah, Mr. Twitter fingers. But now, guess what? Next year, every time he does a nice Twitter, what's going to show up is
crying
Embiid mode. Yeah, with his little girlfriend wiping his tears. So Mr. Twitter fingers is going to have to take some. He's going to have to take some shit the next time he wants to be funny.
They're in a real interesting situation, Philly, because as much as Simmons brings to the table. His inability to shoot, really.
Five shots in game seven.
No,
five
I mean,
shots.
But, like, just his inability, like, It's yeah, so
scared. He's
tough.
He's so scared. He's shook.
It's only so tough in the playoffs. Yeah. If you have a guy that the defense can just literally, they just let him shoot from 10 feet away. And it's so tough to have any flow in the half court offense. And I mean, he plays point guard for them. You have your point guard, and the Celtics experienced this on the Garnett teams to a lesser degree with Rondo. I mean, Rondo is about 10 times the shooter that Simmons is, but they would go to Eddie House when the defense was packing it in too much. And even though Eddie House is about, you know, 1/8 the player Rondo is, it would open the floor up. And they, you know, when they had the big comeback against the Lakers, that's how Eddie House was on the floor and Rondo was on the bench. But you really see it in the playoffs that I just don't think it's a reasonable expectation for them to really go deep if he's going to play point guard. If they want to play him at power forward and have him on the block, I mean, I think he can do a lot of good there, right? I mean, he's good on the block. He's a great passer. But to have him bringing the ball up, passing it, and then going to stand in the corner and watch everybody play 4-on-5 it's a real problem for them. And I mean, I feel like it cost them this series. I don't know if it's a mental block for him. I mean, I've seen clips. He used to shoot threes in high school and stuff. Like, he has to develop some threat of a jump shot. But my question for you, John, is would you consider moving him if you were Philly?
I think Elton Brand already wanted to, but he got the nay from the owners. He was already looking into it, but it's strange they kind of went away from it when they dominated in games 2 and 3. They mixed and matched. They had Jimmy Butler do a lot of the ball handling, and Simmons was very effective going to the basket on some alley-oops and, you know, some tip-ins, you know, closer to the ring, work on the strengths, which is, you know, he's a good finisher around the basket, you know, and keep him away from the outside. But they kind of went away from it, and they just fell back into a kind of basic offense. It's surprising. They already announced that they all like the coach. So Embiid gave the okay to the coach, and they all like him. I think that's the only reason why the coach. Like, if the coach was an asshole, he might have been gone.
Oh, for sure.
They might have looked into it. But, yeah, but he's
– I mean, they're loaded.
He endeared himself to the team. And also, JoJo said he wants Butler and Harris back. So.
And to your
we'll
point –
we'll see how that goes.
To your point, I mean, Kawhi was incredible. But that was a winnable game for Philly.
Yes.
I mean, it was, like you said, I mean, it was 2-on-5. I mean, Lowry couldn't throw it in the ocean. Siakam was a super deer in the headlights, right? Yeah. I mean, he's a real talented kid, and he's going to get better, but he was useless in that game. And if you have, that's four legitimate all-stars on Philly. And J.J. Redick is a very, very, very good player.
To be a fifth worst guy, he's about the best fifth worst guy.
You've got to win that game. You've got to win that game. And
I will give credit though to Gasol. He kept he made Embiid settle for a lot of threes, and he kept the because Embiid could be dominant in the post versus other opponents. He could just take it down low every time.
I mean, that's coaching, right? I mean, what the hell is he doing? I mean, if I'm Toronto, I just go ahead, keep shooting threes.
Yeah.
He's unstoppable down low. I mean, because he's so...
Yeah, but Gasol put a bottom. Gasol did a really nice job, but still, he 1-6 from threes. You know, he gets a little too reliant on that.
So it's a real interesting situation they have. I mean, to your point, I guess the most likely scenario is that they run it back. It wouldn't surprise me if Harris left. I've heard rumblings. Yeah. I've heard rumblings about him to Denver. I mean, his game isn't like super well suited to be a fourth banana like that. You know what I mean? Like he's a good shooter, but I mean, he's not, if you're going to have a guy whose main role is to stand in the corner and shoot threes, I mean, Tobias Harris's resume is a little bit better than that. And he's, you know, he's not the most consistent 3-point shooter in the world.
He's got a good mid-range, more of a mid-range game on the twos. He's got a nice, he doesn't shoot that much. You know,
hey, at least you got to guard him.
He delegated. Yeah, he delegated to the star players, sure.
And I thought Butler was good. I mean, he didn't have a great game 7, but I thought he was really good in the series. And I liked the that. I mean, it gets lost because of how incredible Kawhi's shot was. But Butler's shot to drive to the hoop and shot to tie the game up was really impressive. I'd like a guy who wants to take that shot. You know what I mean? Wants the ball in his hands.
Oh, yeah. Situation. Yeah, I would think he stays, but if he doesn't, whoever gets him is gonna get themselves a hell of a play. He's still 29. He's still got some good years ahead of him. Definitely, I like him.
Then our other game seven, so was really good game. Surprising result to me. Portland, Denver in Denver. Very difficult to win on the road in a game seven. And if you watched every game of this series, it almost seemed like, you know, like when Portland had everything clicking and Denver like still like really didn't play that well a lot of times, that Denver was still in every game, like that four overtime game. Like I really felt like Denver was going to come out and win that game at home. And to go up 17 early, I think it was one of those situations, John, where building that big lead early was like the worst thing that could have happened to them. It gives you, you know, changes your mindset a little bit out there. And, you know, Jokic is the only guy who really showed up for them. And they need somebody else to show up. It's usually Jamal Murray, but he was bad. Harris was okay. But for Portland to win a game seven where Damian Lillard was 3 for 17, it's very impressive. So what I will say about Damian Lillard that you didn't see from, you know, a guy like Kyrie Irving. So if Kyrie Irving's 3 for 17, it's not like he's like positively impacting the game in other ways. Lillard knew he didn't have it. And still, I mean, he already have 9 rebounds, 8 assists.
Ten and eight,
all over the place and really, really contributed in ways other than scoring. And obviously, you know, what gets overshadowed by Kawhi's performance was how incredible C.J. McCollum was. I mean, that was an all-time performance by him. He was incredible. And you must, as the purist that you are, you must have loved it. I think he only hit 1-3.
One three, man. Yeah, you took my whole analysis of the game right out of me, man. That's what I loved. Yeah, he did it old school. And Damian, just like you said, and a lot of other guys, that they would have took the whole team down with that, but with 10 rebounds and 8 dimes, and not only that, there was about 2.5 left. Portland's up by 5. Damian he misses a mid-range jumper, and Jokic gets the rebound and tries to throw an outlet, and Lillard steals it, and he drives on Jokic, and he doesn't have it, and he dishes out, and he runs to the corner. And he hits a three.
It was a huge shot.
And he cuts it to two. He runs to the corner, the shortest, easiest part of the three, and he nails it. And that cut it to two, and they took it from there. And that was one of the biggest plays of the game. So that 3 for 17, that one out of those three was so you know, it accounts for like, you know, so many more points. You nailed it right there. He just did other things, and he also he succumbed to CJ. He dominated the first round. He said, "Okay, CJ, you're hot. You take it this time." And that was what I admired of those two. And hey, we dogged Enes Kanter at the beginning of his defense, and Stotts didn't switch him. I was like, damn, how long? And, you know, is he gonna get Jokic dominated? But Kanter hung in there, and they pretty much said, okay, you know, Jokic is going to get his, but we're going to stop everybody else, which is what they did. Millsap came up short for Denver.
Yeah, and Murray.
Yeah.
Kanter is what he is. I mean, he's a great rebounder, you know? I mean,
he gets destroyed on the pick and roll, but Denver, Jokic handles the ball most of the time. Denver doesn't do pick and roll.
Right.
Now, you saw the opponent.
Yes,
the opponent last night. It was something ridiculous because, I mean, take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, so that brings us to the Warriors. The Warriors lose KD against Houston and go on to win the last two games, which I don't know how you felt, but when he went down, and it seemed like, I mean, it really seemed like from a, you know, social media perspective and kind of just a general feeling was that they might be cooked. And I think pretty clearly it pissed off Clay, Steph, and Draymond. I mean, those guys won 70 excuse me. those guys won 73 games without him. And I mean, Andre Iguodala is a guy who can step in, and I mean, he's not Kevin Durant, and you know, he can't play these 40 minutes a game for too long, but he might be able to for a couple of rounds. And honestly, I thought they like looked, you know, they were inspired by being out there, and they actually looked like Curry had been in such a funk, and he actually looks like he's having fun again. Like, it was really cool to see.
It was almost like they had to remind everybody that, hey, we won a championship without KD.
Yeah, even the year they lost the championship, they broke the friggin' regular season wins record. I mean, it was, you know, you could argue it's the five best teams in history, but watching game one, real tough matchup for Portland. I think that, you know, Denver, and I think you've pointed this out before, John, Denver just got destroyed every time they played Golden State in any game that meant anything. So that would have been a guaranteed sweep.
Yep.
Portland, it's that pick and roll defense. Like, it's almost making, they have to make some adjustments in game two, because like, of all the guys in the world that you can't not come up and guard, it's Steph Curry, right? I mean, you know, those are layups for him, and they did it the whole game, and they have
But it's ironic. Look who comes out to do it. You know, Kevin Looney, who fills in for KD. Is KD running going to set any picks for Curry?
I think he does.
So all of a sudden, but all of a sudden, yeah. So all of a sudden, it's like the offense opens up. He's, you know, Curry's got all these picks for him, and Portland was just the coach Stotts is just refusing to, you know, to change. He just let, you know, Cantor just stays back, and how many times they got burnt, like 5-10 times. And
so, I'd rather take my chances with Curry going. I mean, he's gonna walk around Enes Kanter like he's a statue, but. You know, they have to make some pretty significant adjustments. I mean, to have any chance, they have to win game two, the Blazers. I mean, they lose the first two. They're not beating the Warriors 4 out of 5, right? No way.
Yeah, I got Warriors in 5.
So the Blazers season's on the line in this game, and it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, those two guys are really, really good, and they're tough. They're both really tough, McCollum and Lillard, that it wouldn't surprise me if they came out and got a W in this one with everybody counting them out, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, they need one of the other guys like a Rodney Hood or somebody to step up and give them some hope.
And then lastly, you know, the Warriors, what do you think of the Rockets? I mean,
we could do a whole podcast on that. What I think, I mean, you pay a backcourt $65 million and to come up small like that, it's just
they both played pretty good in game six.
Yeah, Paul. Well, on offense, but still, Paul. You know, he's limited defensively. Yeah. Paul definitely in game six, he came through on offense, but
it's almost like that style, the extreme that did
D'Antoni,
the extreme style. Because I mean, obviously the Warriors shoot a ton of threes, but D'Antoni is at the extreme of the three and layup thing. And I think it really in the playoffs can be detrimental to them. I mean, if I were a fan of Houston, I would be infuriated by how many layups they pass up in order to kick it to fucking Iman Shumpert in the corner for a three. It's nuts to me. It's just nuts to me.
Yeah, on a fast break, where instead of taking it to the hole, you know, the three guys surround the 3-point line on a fast break instead of taking it to the hole for the easy two. And another thing, when Durant went down, Looney was he kind of neutralized Capella. Capella usually gets all those loose balls and the rebounds, and Looney kind of outfought him.
Oh, he played great.
Like 50-50 balls. Yeah, he was a big contributor.
The Warriors played with a chip on their shoulder, and you know they don't like the Rockets. So it's like, I think it was easy, like without Durant, and then having that particular opponent in front of them. I liked them in Game Six. I think we had talked about it a little bit. Said nobody gave them much of a shot, and I said I would not be surprised if they win this game at all.
The Rockets owner was furious. Your boy Fertitta. And he was ready to fight some. He was ready to take somebody in the octagon after the series. So I wouldn't be surprised if
they clean house a little.
D'Antoni, at least. I mean, there's only there's only so much you could do with with guys making $35-30 million. You got to ride them out. But I wouldn't be surprised if they make a move with D'Antoni.
Yeah, agreed. So we both like a Milwaukee Golden State final. You like them both series in five.
Yeah.
I think the East series could go a little longer than that. I think that could be a 6 or 7 game series, but I do like Milwaukee a lot in that series. And like I said, we'll see if the Blazers can pull one out tomorrow. I think they'll extend it to 6. I think if they lose tomorrow, they're going to get swept. That's my prediction. So, John, always a pleasure, my friend, to talk basketball. I'm looking forward to seeing you this weekend.
Definitely, man. I guess we'll try to reconvene before the finals.
Absolutely. And
we definitely have to reconvene on July 1st. That's going to be a huge show because they moved up the deadline to June 30th at 6 p.m. is the free agent embargo.
There it is. Your Knicks they're
hopefully that'll be a hot show. Hey, I'm not touching the money until you never touch the money.
Hopefully Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving doesn't turn into like Tobias Harris and Kemba Walker,
yeah.
So we'll see, John. But always a pleasure, my friend. And for our listeners, thanks so much. Please reach out to us with any questions or stuff you want us to cover. We're always willing to talk about anything. We love you guys. You're the reason we get up in the morning to do this, or get up at night to do this. So for John, I'm the Cowboy, and I'm out of here. Enjoy the playoffs.
Okay. I'm gonna do it again.